Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Greetings A to Z of festival people, and thanks for bearing with us. I had 3 weeks off where I kept on thinking, right, I'm going to get a podcast out this week, and then something came up, or we did a festival or something else. So it's been a little hiatus in the A to Z of festival land, but you know, we can deal with that, and we're back strong. We've got a great new sort of second series of podcasts coming up, and really delighted today to be joined by Claire O'Neill. How are you doing, Claire?
Very well, thank you. I'm very glad to be here, and especially kicking off your return as well. It's
there
an honour.
Opening season two, Claire O'Neill. So, I mean, you know, forgive me, but there may be some people listening that don't immediately recognise the name Claire O'Neill. But, you know, we've been working together for, well, pretty much 15 years.
I'd say probably about 15 years, yeah.
Yeah, even. So you've done so many things with us, from booking the ferries for Bestival, which...
What a task.
I know. I mean, that task before you took it on had kind of destroyed three or four people. Like, it might sound... sort of daft or simple to people, but booking the entire operation to bring an entire sort of festival from the mainland to the Isle of Wight was
pretty insane. I think we had around about 2,500 ferries to book in the space of roughly 5 weeks on and off the island, and bearing in mind the capacity didn't increase from what would normally come on and off the island, so it was trying to squeeze it in through every nook and cranny, and then also fit it in with the site build schedule as well. So I think a lot of people might have been highly frustrated to have to speak to me, but
hello, it's Claire from Bestival. I'm just going to change your ferry. But I mean, you know, obviously we're not here to talk about booking ferries, but I sort of looking back now, you know, I mean, watch this space. You never know with Bestival, it may pop back. But, you know, I've been thinking a lot about the different sort of aspects of it. And, I just take my hat off to you because it was such a monumental task. Did it ever sort of nearly break you? Were you sort of tearing your hair out?
I did. I remember the first few years, it definitely pushed me to tears. Like, I had a couple of moments where it just went, ooh, okay, this is a bit much now. But then it's such a good team all around that understood, like, the kind of degree of the task, and it would always come together in the end. And so despite it being hugely stressful, it was also hugely rewarding, because when you came onto site, you'd see this huge festival and every single little piece you'd been part of.
You'd have a link
there.
To it, yeah.
And also when it was finished and everything was off the island, it was completely finished. And that's a very satisfying kind of job to have, because normally jobs tend to just roll on and evolve and never be completely done. And that's what I quite love about events, actually, and that job in particular. It was a beauty when it was done.
That's ticking all kinds of nice angles with my OCD. I like a tidy... tidy finish, get everything done, get everyone off the
exactly.
island and crack on. So, I mean, our paths have intertwined a lot since then. You know, you are, you know, a sort of jack of a lot of trades. I mean, the thing we're going to talk about today is the work that you've done in the green space to do with festivals, events, which you... I think you were probably involved with when we first met you, but now, you know, you've got a Greener Festival, you've got a Greener Festival Awards, you're totally intrinsically linked with, I mean, it's fair to say independent and major festivals every
year. Yeah, exactly, across the board. I mean, a Greener Festival started from when I first did my dissertation about festivals and the environment in 2005. And then my dear lecturer, Ben Challis, who's a great person in industry, maybe you should interview him at some point, actually.
Ben would be
hilarious.
Good. So he's also Glastonbury's lawyer, isn't he?
He is, yes, yes. That's his mate. That's his job, really. So I teamed up with him back
in
the day.
So he was your lecturer?
Yeah, he taught me intellectual property law and copyright law for the music industry.
Wow.
Originally, I was working with record labels and doing the digital new media licensing kind of stuff. But then I was so into the festival scene that I quickly kind of hung up my label hat and ran off into the woods, so to speak.
Get back to your roots.
Talking of running off into the woods, it was actually Free Parties in the Woods that first inspired me to look at sustainability in relation to festivals, because I went to work on some major festivals in 2004, 2005, and then continuously from then onwards, and saw that on the free parties that were happening on a small level, they had lots of things like solar panels and fair trade food, recycling, composting, and these kind of things. And on the major festivals, they didn't have that yet. And so I thought, well, how can these two worlds kind of meet on these really positive areas, I suppose.
So. Yeah, and it's kind of mad think about that, because, yeah, I hadn't thought about it like that, but I remember going to free parties like Gumbo in Oxford or Spiral Tribe, and yeah, you're right that then they had sound systems going around that were powered by solar, and you thought that was a bit of a kind of gimmick, or at least it was definitely new. And why on earth haven't the rest of us managed to even catch up to that level still, you know, 20, 25 years later? It's a bit embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, on a major scale, like if you've got a huge amount of power that's needed, then solar power wouldn't be the best way to power, like, say, the Pyramid Stage, for example. But the concept and the idea of caring for every single element of a space is something that definitely kind of needs to continue to be passed over from that kind of alternative scene, which I think it is more and more now, and that also the technologies have come along that you could power huge stages on renewable energy as well, of different types.
Oh, that's great. I mean, so it really is a passion for you that's turned into a job.
Yeah, exactly.
Dream job.
It was quite unexpected, because I've done quite a few things over the time. Like, for example, for 6 years, as with the Association of Independent Festival, with you and our good friend Ben Turner, and then also I became a circus performer in the meantime, so doing lots of aerial circus performing and working with Arcadia as an aerialist and as a show manager on their shows with the Spider as well.
Yeah.
So lots of different things going on, but always there was that thread of a Greener Festival, just because there was so much interest for it, as well as a passion from my side and all of the people that I work with to make it happen. But the last five, certainly the last 2 years, the amount of interest and the acceleration of how much is happening in the space of making things more sustainable is just completely unprecedented. It's like an exponential increase in activity and awareness, which is very exciting, but it's also quite hard to keep up with.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably fair to say that maybe when you were first talking about this to, you know, us and a lot of festivals, it was kind of like, you know, Claire, that's really interesting, but actually this is what we're worried about at the moment, you know, competition or talent or price of this, or, you know, I think a lot of us always tried our hardest to do stuff, whereas festivals like Shambhala, you know, for a decade have been completely on board with that. But now you can't avoid it. You, as a festival promoter, events organizer, you cannot go into this space without having your green hat on.
Absolutely. It's become quite a central part of it. And it did used to be something that was a nice to do. And a lot of festivals did so much as well. I mean, many of the events were quite pioneering in different kind of innovations. And that's one of the beauties of the festivals, because you've got the opportunity of creating infrastructure from scratch. So if you wanted to, for example, change a sewerage system, to do that in a city, it would take a huge amount of investment and a lot of risk. And then if you were to do it, if it didn't work, like, that's a major problem and a major amount of money lost. Whereas when you've got temporary cities, essentially, you've got the opportunity to try those different ways of doing things. And that's beneficial for informing technologies for kind of urban sustainability, but also for emergency situations or where there's huge amounts of people that suddenly need an infrastructure.
And so have you actually seen that happen, that technology from festivals has gone to...
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in the sanitation side of things. So there's organisations like, I know that Natural Event have done work in that space. And
I've just written down Natural Event because I just saw he is someone that we need to talk about.
Yeah, he is a force to be reckoned with. ultimate disruptor.
I should get it's Hamish, isn't
Hamish,
it?
Hamish,
get Hamish on.
Hamish Skirmer.
We're talking about Hamish, who, for those who are not in the loop on... what does he call his toilets? I mean, I know they're compostable
Pootopia
toilets.
Pootopia is one of the designs. Yeah.
You sort of always have to sort of slightly grimace as you sort of talk about it, because it's talking about poo and wee and people going to toilets. But he lives and breathes, poo and wee, doesn't he?
Like, he does.
You sort of maybe sort of touch elbows with him rather than shake hands all the time when he's in the build. But I mean, that sort of thing. He came to us and a lot of festivals with this. Like, hey guys, you don't need these toilets that are just flushing stuff into rivers and here and there and being taken away. Use a handful of sawdust, use this system and I'll take it away.
There's lots of systems. The essential crux of kind of what makes a sustainable toilet system, I suppose, is does it harness the nutrients that are in it? Because there's things that are being depleted in our soils, for example, different types of nutrients that are essential building blocks for growing food. And because of the way that we've used the land for such a long time, these things are really valuable resources. And at the moment, that's something that you can get through what goes into the toilets. But we put harsh chemicals into it and clean it all up. So kind of treat it as a quite bad waste problem rather than actually a resource. And obviously it's hugely complex and it needs to be very carefully done because it's human waste, but it's actually not human waste, it's nutrients. The other thing is trying to not use water as well, because these systems don't use water usually, the compost toilets. Another example is Luwot, which is generating electricity from what goes into the toilet, and they do a huge amount of work in places where they've got severe need for sanitation as well.
Okay, how does that work then?
So now I'd need to look at the finer details, but they essentially shrink wrap everything that goes into the toilet.
Please don't tell my listeners, we are getting on to some other subjects soon.
It always goes down this route somehow. And then because there's a lot of calorific content in what goes in there, then you can generate electricity through the process. You need to talk to Virginia, who's the person that's the actual engineer of it, to get the finer details. Wow. Which I highly recommend. You can have a poo series, in fact.
Yes. We're going to do a whole series just on poo. But yeah, I mean, this was going to be a very short intro, which is turning into a fascinating chat. I mean, the meat and drink of this was going to be that we're going to do a 10 things that festival goers can do to help the environment. Is that it in kind of in a nutshell?
Yeah.
So, I mean, before we do that, though, because I do just want to talk to you about your silks and your circus and Arcadia, because I remember when you were working with us at the Association of Independent Festivals and... You sort of just dropped into a conversation. Oh yeah, I'm doing silks. I didn't even know what silks were. And I mean, that is essentially a kind of, not a trapeze, but it's
So it's the fabric that you climb up and roll down and tie yourself up into it. And
And are you actually tied onto anything?
No, you kind of make loops here and there so that you might at some point have it around your thigh or your hip or your arm or your neck if you're doing a neck hang. Don't want to get that one wrong.
No.
But yeah, it's lots of
different
movements.
You don't want to get any of them wrong,
so,
do you?
No, you don't. Generally, my biggest fear was getting stuck rather than falling off.
Right.
but it's all sorts of different aerial stuff. Some of it is on trapeze or silks or rope. I started doing chains for a while, but I think I'm going to stop that now. It's too abrasive. And then harness work, which is what I do with Arcadia, and that's the most fun, because normally if you're in harness, it means you're really high and possibly hanging off some kind of heavy machinery. So it's yeah, that's the best.
I love the look of passion on your face. I did, me and my 11-year-old son did a the zip wire in London at the weekend, and that was
really
180 steps brilliant. Up, and that terrified me so much, just stepping off these metal steps, not being allowed to hold on, and then sort of jumping off. And I am not cut out for
silks. Didn't you get taken up on the crane once at Bestival?
I did, yeah, by off HMS Bestival. I looked like I was raving in the audience, and I had a harness on, and the girl came down, hooked me on, and I suddenly got whisked into the sky, and that was the most terrifying 3 minutes of my life as
well.
Good
on you.
Okay, well, let's move off silks and everything into one quick thing. Fast forwarding through those sort of 2 decades or 15 years that you've been doing this, what do you think the 2 or 3 things that you've really seen in the last few years? Because the first one of these podcasts I did was with Emily Eavis, and we were talking about steel goblets and the plan that Glastonbury had to kind of ban single-use plastics and to not even have pint glasses and stuff anymore. And, you know, they've obviously came a long way. Glastonbury made huge, huge strides this year. What are the sort of 2 or 3 things that you think have really made a difference
really changed
this year?
I'd say probably the biggest thing is the amount of awareness about food impact now, because for a long time we've known the quite obvious impact of travel to get to places, but actually the production of food is hugely significant, and you've seen more and more festivals now increasing the amount of vegan or vegetarian food, which generally has a much lower impact because of the land use, and especially if you're getting seasonal produce that's relatively local, but mainly it appears to be the land use that's the biggest impact of the food that we eat. So because more festivals have been starting to program or curate their food options, I suppose that's had probably a really significant impact in the amount of, I suppose we'd call it carbon equivalent, but I'm not going to get too technical.
I saw a big debate on the Boomtown forums after Boomtown about them talking to their customers about going meat free, and Shambhala already does that, doesn't it?
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it went meat free. I think probably about 4 or 5 years ago, and they had an insect stall in there, and they were stimulating debate as much as possible.
So does that mean you couldn't even cook bacon in the campsite?
I think that it didn't go that far, but I wasn't involved on the ground there, so I couldn't say for sure. But I think that was one of the arguments that came up, because if a festival doesn't provide good sourced quality meat, and then the audience just buy really bad bacon rashers from somewhere that's not well sourced, then is that actually a plus or a minus? And I think that's something that's really important to take on board, that there's the one thing is just avoiding meat altogether. However, if you're going to eat meat or fish, then where is it actually coming from?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is Rob DeBank's A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now and please remember to rate. So yeah, I mean, Claire has come up with 10, roughly speaking, kind of bits of advice, tips for you guys, the festival goers, maybe some of you are festival promoters out there. So this, we've probably tailored this a bit more towards the festival goer rather than the industry,
exactly,
because but it may cross into that. So yeah, far away with numero uno.
Cool. Numero uno would be, prior to actually getting to the festival, get informed about what they're doing. So if you go onto any festival's website now, like you were saying earlier, Robbie, it's very likely the festival is doing something already. So have a look at what their plans are and what they're asking you to engage with. And that might be something related to transport or things to bring, things not to bring, and make sure that you get involved with that. If there's nothing there whatsoever, then instead I'd recommend that you get in touch with the festival and say, well, what are you doing? And then maybe you can have even more influence by actually making them think about it if they haven't already.
Yeah, I mean, so most festivals have a sort of T's and C's and green pages and stuff.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Tell you what they do, and you know, And litter bonds and stuff like that as well. Is that what
So there might be things like litter bonds, for example, where if you arrive at the festival, you get given a bag for sorting your recycling, and then you give £10 or something in advance. That might be part of the ticket price. You need to then take it back in order to get your bond back, for example. So have a look at what's going on and what you can get involved with. There might also be things that you can volunteer with as well. If it's a festival that you're in love with and you're part of that community, then how can you be part of the solution, because it's not just about the festival organizer alone. It's the audience are creating the festival as much as the organizer are. You know, it's a participatory thing, so what can you do to help? So that'd be number one, I reckon.
Lovely.
Number two would be to really go slim on what you're packing. So think about what you need to take in advance, and if you're going to get all sorts of new elaborate costumes, then get them secondhand or share things or find reclaimed stuff that you can get, so that you're not generating loads of new things that are going to end up waste at the end of the day. So many people have gone to so many festivals now that there's a huge amount of fancy dress stuff already out there. So make it really unique and go and find stuff that's already been done.
Go slim, I like that. So get down on the number of accessories and outfits, and also still a lot of people taking a mad lot of technology and speakers and, you know, music speakers and stuff, and it's like there's enough music there. And
exactly, and it's probably because I'm not actually 18 anymore, but not far off. But there's nothing worse than when you've already listened to like 36 hours of music and then you go back to the camp and someone's playing more of the same music next to your head.
Yeah.
Obviously, that is actually part of the fun for many people. So
We're not going to be the fun police here. Embrace that.
Exactly.
But I suppose, the message is don't take anything that you can't also take away with you. Maybe.
Exactly. And also it's... that can relate to what the festival is saying on their environmental pages or in advance, because if they've worked out a really kind of closed loop system on what they're doing with materials that are on site, then if you bring in loads of other stuff that doesn't fit their kind of systems, then it can cause big problems. So I'll go into some specific examples on that in a second, actually, for when you're actually on site. So prior to going and leaving the house as well, number three is to turn everything off before you go that doesn't need to be on, unless obviously you've got housemates, because that's a bit mean. And check the fridge, check the cupboards, make sure you're not leaving a bunch of stuff that's going to go off while you're away. There's been a few studies, obviously often people say, well, wouldn't the most green festival be one that doesn't happen at all? But again, that's kind of getting into fun police territory, and we don't want that to happen. There's a lot of important social engagement that happens at events. And also, we talked about the benefits that they have for generating new ideas and technologies and systems. So we don't want to lose festivals.
No, I love that idea, though, that I don't think many people would think about that, about actually... Yeah, what are you leaving behind at home and, you know, in terms of electricity consumption? And,
yeah, because if you can turn stuff off there and make sure that nothing's getting wasted there, then you can actually have a lower impact by living at a festival for a week, because you've got communal cooking, communal living, you've not got everything switched on the whole time. So,
nice.
So yeah.
I like it.
And then everyone should just spend more time
live in
at
a field
festivals.
And,
exactly. So you've packed really light already, you've got informed about what's happening, you've turned off all the things that don't need to be on and sorted out your waste food so that there isn't any. And then when you're on the way to the festival, oh, first of all, you need to choose how you're going to travel there. And that needs to be as low carbon as possible somehow. If you were going to Bestival back in the day, you could have swam there.
Yeah, that was one way, yeah, if you were very brave.
Yeah, you just need to get oiled up in advance and off you go.
Did you ever do that?
I didn't, no. I could get the ferry for free.
Yeah. You're doing so many people so many favours.
That's it. I couldn't miss my free meal on the ferry.
But there are loads of, tons of festivals doing bike to,
exactly.
Biking to their festivals. And
exactly. So that's an option. And there's actually a festival in the Netherlands called Into the Great Wide Open. Mm-hmm. And they trialled last year a luggage service where in the local towns they were doing a collection of people's camping equipment and stuff so that people could travel in a lower kind of impact way, and then they would just collect their stuff when they got to the festival.
Wow.
Which I thought was a really nice idea. And then there's also usually packages that you can get where you can take the bus along with all your other festival folk to get to the festival, and that way you can start the party in advance as well. So again, that links with getting informed. If you desperately really have to drive, then make sure that you share all the spaces that are there. There's usually things like Go Car Share and Lyft Share that you can use. And obviously there's social media where you can connect with people as well to come together.
Nice. Is that three, four?
That is, that's only, that's four, I think.
Okay.
Four. Yeah,
these
so number five is to beware of supermarket psychosis.
Ah.
And I fall victim to this as well. You're on your way to go to a festival, you think, well, stop off at the supermarket just to get one or two things, and you end up getting shopping trolleys full of stuff that can just perish in the campsites.
Okay. So is that including, like, very cheap tents and kind of camping stuff that you don't necessarily really need, or is it more food stuff?
Both, really. And actually, we can link this with number six, because number six was about camping stuff. So when you go into the supermarket, you might think, oh, I'm going to make all of my own food, and so you'll buy loads of pots of hummus I don't know,
sausages in a can.
Sausage, exactly, yeah. So you'll end up getting
loads of
food.
You're coming at it from a healthier option.
I am, yeah.
Angle than many 18-year-olds who have got those, like,
that's
breakfast
true.
In a can, like sausage, beans, egg. Just have
exactly.
one of those each day.
Exactly. But what we see is that loads of food gets left over at the end of festivals in campsites.
Right.
So just try to not take more than what you need again.
Yeah.
And also just buying random stuff that's in there too, that's just going to end up being single use and going in the bin.
Well, I suppose it's exciting, isn't it? It's like when you go on holiday as a kid, you know, you want a word search
exactly.
pen and paper, and, you know, you kind of get excited in the car. And, yeah, when you're going to a festival, it's like, yeah, I need, you know, cider and sweets and chocolate. And
yeah, exactly. But the thing is, there's so many good things that you can get. It depends what festival you go to, I guess. But normally there's going to be a lot of really interesting stalls, caterers, who are usually independent businesses as well, who are coming there with quite unique things. So you generally don't need to bring loads of extra stuff to site. You're going to spend most of your time out in the arena having a good time anyway.
Yeah. But playing devil's advocate, I mean, I know a lot of people, you know, that have saved, you know, some people saved all year for that ticket, and, you know, they haven't got that much spare cash left once they've got there. So I think the thinking is festival food can be expensive, and,
you
know, the festival campsite shop can be more expensive than
a Tesco's or an Aldi or a Morrison.
So yeah, I mean, I do understand why people have to take that mindset stuff in advance.
That's where it has to meet in the middle. Because what a number of events are doing now as well is starting to do affordable meals. So every caterer is asked to do a meal that's at this set price,
okay. And
they need to offer that on site. And obviously, you can still take stuff into the festivals, but just try to not make it be too much stuff so it ends up going to waste. Because that's what we see at the end, is that although you've got it to be economical, you end up wasting money because you throw a lot of it away. So just try and be measured. Avoid the psychosis.
Yeah, I like that.
And then with the camping as well, if there's the opportunity to get something that's pre-pitched, like for example, there's Camplight who salvage tents and then they pre-pitch them on events, but it's not boutique camping. So it's not like crazy expensive, but it means that you don't need to pack down your tent. And if you do that, then get something that's durable and that's not just going to end up smashed up to pieces, and that you're not going to leave it behind in the end. Also, don't smash up other people's tents. That would be nice.
No, it's not very nice. Not very festival friendly. But yeah, I mean, with Camplight and Tangerine Fields and all those services, you know, you get your bedding as well. And yes, it's extra money. But if you're not going to use that tent that you're going to buy again that year, or you think you're going to buy another one the next year, then maybe it's more worthwhile.
Because you had, I think you had a chat with AIF a few months ago as well about the Dressed Up on Plastic campaign, and they did an example of one tent is the equivalent of about 8,000 plastic straws. So if you're worried about plastic pollution, then think about what leaving any kind of camping equipment behind is going to do. And if it's being left because it's being broken, then get something that's going to last in advance, because otherwise the amount of water, oil, energy, plastic that goes into the process, we just can't sustain it.
You are full of sound advice today, Miss O'Neill. Okay, number seven?
Number seven is toilets.
Yes, we love that.
We love toilets.
Who and we?
Yay! So we've talked about those quite a lot already, but again, this comes into getting informed in advance. What kind of toilets are actually there? Because some of them you might need to actually help with the process. So, for example, we talked about the toilets that use the sawdust. And then there's other types of toilets that might not use sawdust, but you need to not put things like sanitary products and especially baby wipes. Baby wipes don't break down in the sewage systems, and they also they just don't decompose. They often have plastic in them. So if you can avoid baby wipes, certainly for the toilet and even for washing as well, take a flannel and put water on it, old school style.
The listeners can't see the grimace on my face. I'm quite a seasoned toilet festival goer, but crikey, a flannel.
Don't use a flannel in the toilet, flannel. More for washing your face.
Oh, right, okay, good. I wondered what you were talking about, recycling nappies there, but okay, cool.
But yeah, that's an important one as well, actually. Nappies, sanitary products. It's quite difficult, actually, because on the one hand, there's lots of reusable items that you can use for that, but then on the other hand, there might not be the facilities at the festival to deal with reusable nappies or sanitary products. So that's something that there needs to be a bit of work on that, actually, generally across the industry.
Okay.
And then food choices on site, we already touched upon. That's number eight, I believe. Yeah, food choices on site.
Mm-hmm.
So for one, not taking too much stuff with you. And then if you are going to buy things, are you actually thinking about where has this come from? What's the information that the stalls are giving? If they've got fish or if they've got meat, is it MSC, Marine Stewardship Council, or is it Red Tractor meat, for example? Or if you know that there's going to be a lower impact from having vegan or vegetarian food, then can you try some of those options instead as well?
I think it's fair to say, you know, 10 years ago, you had the noodle bar, you had the fish and chip place, and it was all a bit sort of homogenous and no detail. And now it's amazing when you go to festivals, the amount of detail that you can get. And if it's not written up there on a chalkboard, then maybe just ask the person in charge, the trader, because they're so knowledgeable.
Yeah.
And they also have to tick boxes for the promoter, don't they? So they'll often be only using recyclable cutlery or plates and stuff. So all that stuff that, you know, you might not see it straight away, but yeah, talk to the traders because they're mostly friendly.
Yeah, and it's coming from all directions as well, because the promoter might be asking, we want to do XYZ in relation to the food offering and the serveware, etc. The trader themselves might have their own passion about trying to minimize their environmental impact. People generally, like everybody in the audience, the staff, the crew, all of us want to improve things. So we're starting to find that there's a real meeting in the middle of all of these areas all pushing in the same direction, which is why big leaps are starting to happen, actually.
Serveware. I'm glad that you used that word because I didn't know
what to call it.
Yeah, serveware.
I have to talk about it so much, needed to be able to summarise it.
Okay.
And then number 9, reusable cups and maybe even cutlery, bottles, etc. Obviously, this is something you think about in your packing before you go. Most events now provide plentiful places where you can refill your water, and a lot of them do chilled or filtered, etc. Also the coffee traders, if you're going there, that can they're quite used to doing refills. You can usually get discounts as well, and many of the bars are starting to use reusables as well, where that makes sense. If there is a reusable with a deposit or a levy, then try and bring it back in the end, because I mean, obviously you could take away your souvenir if you want to, if it's got something related to the event, but the more that it gets actually reused, the more that it's actually an environmental benefit.
Especially at family festivals, kids have definitely cottoned on to the fact that taking those glasses and pints back to the bar will be some extra pocket money.
I think it was Download Festival in 2005 or 2006 did a reusable cup deposit, and they were like, this is great, but they had to start to then make secure areas because suddenly it became a valuable commodity.
Kids just in the bins, like their feet sticking out. Cool. And last but not least,
number 10, I've actually put Ask the Artists at number 10, because like this year we did a Green Artist Rider with Paradigm, who were Coda Agency formerly. And this is where I was talking about how all the different areas are starting to meet in the middle, which is pushing everything in the same direction. From a greener festival's perspective, often there'd be a lot of really good initiatives happening on the festivals, and then it would come to the artists' area or the dressing room or the riders, and suddenly it would stop. It'd be like, this is almost like an untouchable area that can't change. Whereas now we're starting to see that a lot of the riders, hospitality riders certainly, that are coming in are starting to request different green elements, whether that's a reduction in plastic or locally sourced food, etc. So that's really helping the organisers in some cases to be able to deliver what they want to, and everybody's going, oh, okay, so we want the same thing here. Let's work together on it. Equally, in the kind of days of social media, everyone has such an influence, and if the fans of artists are asking the artists, well, what is it that you're doing to help the scene to be more sustainable, then you might be quite pleasantly surprised, or you might again have a really good influence on your favourite artists. There's been a few artists who've done incredible stuff recently. One DJ, for example, Blondish, has started this Bye Bye Plastic campaign, where they're doing an eco rider for DJs internationally, and they're starting by working on the plastic side, but then also a much bigger issue that everybody's trying to scratch their heads around is how we're going to keep doing international touring when at the moment the transport industry is so carbon heavy. So, but the more people that start to ask the right questions and push the right buttons, the quicker we'll crack the nut, I think.
That is brilliant. Ask Artists is number 10. You are a fountain of knowledge, and we could kind of talk about this all day because it is one of the most crucial things we should be talking about with festivals.
Urgent.
But thank you so much for coming in and sharing that knowledge. So for people that do want to get more involved, want to find out some more info, where's the best places to
if you go to www.agrenafestival.com, there's a huge amount of resources there, and it links to lots of different areas, people who are doing great work in all the different topics that we've just talked about, and we'd be happy to point you in the right direction.
Wicked. Agrenafestival.com. There you go. That is Claire O'Neill. Thank you so much, Claire.
Thank you.
We'll see
so
you out in the fields. Cheers. This is Rob DeBank's A to Z of Festivals. Subscribe now and please remember to rate.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.